Okay, so today's call is our special guest, Kent Buller, and the topic is on fathers. And I think it's, as I read this bio, I think it's important to know that Kent's wife, Amy, wrote it because it gives insight into their relationship, into the warmth and respect and regard that they have for one another. So, and the fun humor in their home. And so let me go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about Kent. Kent Buller is married to the fabulously wonderful Amy Buller and is the father of 7 amazing children. Prior to his departure from the conveyor belt, he received a Spanish minor, a BA in economics, a BA in international relations, and an MBA from BYU. Kent is passionate about family, freedom, and our future. His version of thrill-seeking includes mentoring Key Liberty, TGYC, and the Freedom Project classes each week. In his spare time, Kent also runs 2 small businesses, providing technical submissions for pharmaceutical companies and helping people create wealth through real estate. Kent is equally happy chasing down cars with his Silver Snatchit, his name for his pedal-powered road bike, or snatching gems from the clutches of history. As a certified Six Sigma black belt, he's also liable to knock your socks off, which I completely agree with Amy. All right, Kent, let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to interact with you for the duration of the call, but I'm going to let you take it from here.
Awesome, thank you. So I have to say that I have the best family. So awesome. And I want to start by telling a bedtime story that I've told my kids for a long time now. And it's called The Story of the Man and the Lady. Once upon a time, there was a man, and he saw this lady, and she was amazing. She had an incredible smile. She was brilliant. She was smart, gorgeous. And the man had these season soccer tickets. And he and his roommate had a goal that they would go to every single soccer match of the season and bring a date with them. And it was Wednesday night, quickly approaching midnight, and they realized that they did not have dates for the Friday soccer match. And so they looked out the window to see whose lights might be on across the way in the girls' side of the apartment complex and saw a light that was on and quickly consulted their resources to see who lived in that apartment and determined...
Oh, my goodness, you're kidding.
Oh. This is, in fact, a true story. And so...
Okay, keep going.
So they walked across and knocked on the window with the light on, and they opened the window, and they proceeded to ask their dates to go to the soccer game. What's funny about that story is originally I was supposed to ask a different girl, and my roommate asked the girl I was supposed to ask, and so I ended up asking Amy to go with me. So the man took the lady to the soccer match, and it was really cold, and so they wrapped up in a blankie and talked and enjoyed the game. And after the match, the lady asked the man if he wanted to go to her apartment for some hot cocoa. And the man said, yeah, sure. And so they went and had some hot cocoa and talked and talked, and they saw each other every single day after that until it came to the point in time when the man asked the lady if she would be his best friend forever and ever. And she said, yeah, sure. And so they were married, and soon after that, a crazy thing started to happen. The lady's tummy started getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and there are sound effects that go along with this story. Bigger, bigger, bigger. Until out came baby Chris. And he was so precious, and we loved him, and we were so excited to have him and held him in our arms. And And a little bit later, it happened again. The lady's tummy got bigger, 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 and then came Brad. And it happened again with Dan, and then with Emma, and then with Benjamin, and then with Gabby. And Gabby's the one who I've been telling the story to of late. And when you came out, I held you in my arms. I was so thankful that you came to our family. And that's the story of the man and the lady. Let me tell you a little bit more about it. That's kind of the kid's version, the bedtime story. Let me give you a little bit more about that story. Right after Amy and I got married, I kind of had this master plan for my life. I was at BYU, we were both at BYU, and I wanted to get all these degrees and go work for a big corporation and get a lot of experience and then leave that big company and start my own company. Well, I did that, got the degrees and went and worked for Intel and worked there for about 12 years. And as I was going through that, though, I kind of got in this rut where my life was mostly consisting of getting up in the morning, going to work. And it's funny because in Oregon, where we lived for a lot of those years, you know, it'd be dark when I got up in the morning to go to work. It'd be dark when I left work to come home. In Portland, Oregon, it's overcast, you know, and so I'd go 9 months out of the year without seeing the sun, and I was just kind of this robot getting up, going to work, coming home, you know, unplugging from work by plugging into the TV, and that was kind of my life. And forgot about kind of that master plan. Well, Intel moved us to Colorado. That was a choice. And after being there for about 7 years, they shut the factory down. And at that point in time, I had a decision to make to stay with Intel and move back to Portland or to go to Phoenix. And I guess at that point, I believe in a higher power, and I believe at that point in time he started knocking me upside the head saying, hey, you got some other things to do. And so it didn't feel right to stay with Intel. I applied for lots of other jobs similar to that in corporate life and corporate America, and had one offer to go to Qatar, and in the Middle East as an expat, and that wasn't right either, even though we had often talked about working overseas. That wasn't right, and so finally we ended up moving to St. George with no job, no real prospects for a job, no real industry, or no real companies like what I did in St. George, but with this idea that I would turn my hand at consulting. As Tiffany read from my bio, I was a Six Sigma Black Belt, which is just a fancy consultant for quality assurance and manufacturing systems. And so I thought I'd try my hand at consulting and become an entrepreneur, and I did. Being an entrepreneur was much harder than I thought, and went through four different careers as an entrepreneur before finding a couple things that have been working out for me of late for the last 3 or 4 years, which is fantastic. But backtracking a little bit there, you know, the thing that started all that started changing me and helping remember what my master plan was and kind of that vision was, is that when we were in Colorado, Amy got this call from Tiffany saying, hey, well, our family and her family, meaning our parents and Tiffany's parents, have been friends for a long, long time. And so we've stayed in touch over the years, and we have actually been homeschooling since the beginning with Chris in different forms. But Tiffany gave us this call and said, hey, you need to learn about TJ Ed and what we're doing with Lemmy. And it completely changed our lives. And that started with me reading Les Mis. So and George Wythe was doing the face-to-face with greatness seminars, and the required reading for the seminar that we went to was Les Mis. And so I read Les Mis, and it was the first time that I picked up a book for a long, long time. When I was a teenager, I was a major bookworm and read all the time and loved it, and getting stuck in that rut with corporate life, you know, I stopped doing that. And so I read Les Mis, and it woke me up, if you will. And so at that point, I unplugged from the TV and started reading again. And we moved to St. George, and we got involved in a great Commonwealth, and I started mentoring. And my life is night and day from where I was back then. And so that's kind of my story. Tiff, do you want me to jump into flirting, or
in just a minute. I just have to, because I have just a teeny part of your story. I have to share part of my side.
Okay.
As Kent said, we've been longtime family friends, and although I love to teach and expound on principles of education, I'm not actually the type of personality that goes out and advertises what I do. In fact, the only person that I've ever shared anything about homeschooling with is Amy. The way that my personality is, like, I've talked to other people, and lots of people are so good at sharing and going and pulling people in, and where I found what I was good at was teaching and expounding, and my expertise was in leadership education and helping people to learn how to take responsibility for their education and what the principles are and how to do it, and of course, writing the Scholar Project. So calling Amy, Kent, I don't know if you've ever heard my side of that story. Have you ever heard it?
I think I've heard a little bit of it, but go ahead.
I had three different dreams about Amy. And mind you, I don't think we had talked for, I know we, on really important things, we saw each other. Like, you guys came to my wedding, and maybe we saw each other once after that. But I don't really think that we had talked for a lot of years. And so to have three dreams about Amy was really unusual. And so I called my mom and asked how maybe I could find her. And she gave me Leslie's email address or something like that, but I never got a hold of Amy's mom. And it was about 9 months later that my mom and Amy's mom got together. And my mom told me about it, and all of a sudden I realized, oh, my gosh, I have to talk to Amy. I remember now. And that's why I called. And like I said, I've never really been someone to invite someone into this, and I was super scared to talk to both of you, and it really encouraged me when I found out that you homeschooled. And I remember we got together and we had lunch, and it was amazing. And I've been so amazed by all of the people that you and Amy have touched, all of the students, all of the families, the communities that you've lived in. It's been humbling to watch what you guys have done. Okay, go ahead and read. Now, what I've asked Kent to share and read, we had a retreat and an in-service with all of our Lemmy trainers, and Kent is one of our Lemmy trainers, and he read this to us, and we can put it up on the website, or Kent might have a website that you can go to and get it, but Kent, go ahead and share this with us.
Yeah, so I love Oliver DeMille, and Amy and I got to be in a class with them a while back, a year or so ago, and I love writing, and he had us write, and so I wrote this little paper, and since then, well, I have a pending project to go write a book around this topic, but this would serve as the introduction or the preface to that book, and it is on my website, which is structuredgenius.com, and it's entitled Flirting with Greatness. As a father with young children, I was subjected to a recent Muppet movie. which centered on the theme man or Muppet. Each of the main characters, twins, one a man and one a Muppet, had to determine if they were a Muppet of a man or just a manly Muppet. As men in today's society, this seemingly flippant and childish movie may have actually struck a chord. Must men languish under the malaise of being Muppety, or can we be real men? If so, then what kind of a man am I? Me, I am a manly man. I shoot guns, ones with really big bullets. I work out every once in a while, but I grunt, belch, and bottom burp with the best of them. I am a manly man. Okay, so maybe my belly looks more like Big Bird's. While I am most definitely an educated, erudite man, I have read Les Mis a full 1 1/3 times. I have seen the play on Broadway, at Tuacon, at the local high school, and at SUU. With that kind of exposure, I am now just as fantastic as Jean Valjean. Well, at least in the shower. In reality, it's possible I croak more like Kermit. I know. I am a respected mentor man. I have dedicated several years imparting my great wisdom to young scholars. I mentor other mentors on how to become great mentors. I even do most of what I ask my mentees to do. Fine. So maybe I'm more like Cookie Monster, who only pretends to eat lots of cookies when in fact they all fall uneaten to the ground. Now I'm really not liking that Muppet movie. Thinking about what kind of a man I am reminds me of a younger version of myself. Then, just as now, I had all the proper trappings of a bona fide male member of society. In fact, I was a real ladies' man. I would flit about the kingdom, gracing the fair maidens from far and wide with my acquaintanceship. But alack, once such sweet damsels let slip the L word from their lips, this knight in shining armor would be off to new adventures. Until the day a true princess thoroughly charmed my heart and caused me to settle down and finally begin to learn what kind of a man I was meant to be. My wife, certainly one of God's greatest gifts to me, brought commitment and purpose to my life. She taught me to quit flirting with happiness and helped me to find real joy. So perhaps my current Muppet misery is once again my own fault. Perhaps I have fallen back into old habits and have the appearance of having it all together, while lacking purpose and passion, not having a vision greater than myself. Perhaps if I committed to stop flirting with greatness and truly grabbed the bull by the horns, I would pull myself back onto my destined path of unbelievably amazing knock-your-socks-off incredibleness. Perhaps it is time to stop wondering how manly a Muppet I may be. Because hidden there, nagging from the deep recesses of my conscience, has long been the notion that I am not a Muppet of a man. I am a son of God charged with great responsibility to have a wildly positive impact for good, and one who accepts and lives up to that charge is the best kind of man. Do you still flirt too? Or are you ready like I am to step up and go the distance as a man?
I love that, Kent. Thank you so much for sharing. That leads us into the meat of today, and I have a question for you. What do you think, what are some of the greatest challenges to being a man?
Oh, boy. Well, there are a lot of great men on the call, I'm sure. I don't know. It's interesting looking at what the media portrays to us as a society. And it seems like men are being dumbed down. They're being emasculated. And so from a cultural perspective, it's hard to be a real man or the kind of men that we ought to be. So one of the things that's hard is just taking responsibility, taking accountability. There's all kinds of examples around that. Some of the fun, well, you look at family movies, they're quote-unquote family movies supposed to be okay for families, half the time there isn't a father figure that's present in that movie. If there is a father figure that's present in that movie, typically he's a bumbling idiot or kind of stupid or not someone that you would respect. In the church that I belong to, oftentimes the joke is made that if you want something done, then you need to have the woman take care of it. And so I guess that's something that's important to me, or something that I see that needs to be different, and that is that as men, we are the patriarchs in our home. As fathers, we are the patriarchs in our home, and we need to be co-equals with our spouses. It's not flip it 180 degrees the other way, where now we're the domineering one or the dominant one or should be the dominant. It's not that at all, but that we should be co-equals. We shouldn't be so passive that we let things go. And for me, well, as a male, it's easy to be lazy. And so you're married to a great woman, a wonderful spouse. I'm married to, you know, my sweetheart, to Amy. She's amazing. She's incredible. And it's really easy to let her, because she is so gifted and talented, to just take responsibility and be in charge of everything. And that's not the proper role for me. That's not what I should be doing. And so a challenge there is to step up to the plate, to man up, and to be co-equal, to try and match your greatness.
Wow. I heard a couple of challenges in that. One of them is that in our culture, it's really, really acceptable for men not to rise to their potential. So culturally, there's not a lot of pressure to be what you can actually be. And then the other one is to actually take responsibility for the potential and the role and the responsibility that men have. You know, I've been thinking about roles and the norms of society, the expectations that we put on ourselves, the expectations we think others have on us. Men have as many varying roles as women do. What do you think about what you thought your roles are, and you mentioned a couple of times the master plan or some expectations that you had of yourself, a vision that you gained for your life. How has that expanded and matured or changed? And I'm sure that it probably has to do with roles.
Yeah, it does. Well, first is to be a husband. And so as part of that role, I need to provide for my wife and for my family.
And that's a challenge in and of itself.
It is.
I remember, you know, not having the role as strong as, because you and I grew up in the same culture, where in our culture it's expected that the man has the main responsibility to provide, and that the wife is to help meet in all areas, including that. But in our culture, the role is that's the man's responsibility, right?
Yes.
So I remember when I began dating Rick and feeling, oh my gosh, the pressure of that challenge on him, just even when we were dating, how heavy that burden was. And
you know, jumping in really quick.
It wasn't something I carried. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that's another way that men are being crushed in today's environment, because the economy is so hard that pressure to provide or the challenge to provide becomes so difficult that that it crushes men and pushes them back into the corner and makes it easier for them, I guess, to abdicate some of their roles and some of their responsibilities as a real man.
And to talk about this in all fairness, you know, our society began changing a long, long, long time ago. The actual ability that a man has now to solely provide for his family is very, very, very different than it was in the early 1900s.
That's right.
The actual system, the policies, even the way that our taxes are structured, you know, at one point it was encouraged that the more children you had, because they encouraged having children, the better off you were financially. Things are changing with the different kinds of rights that we have, with the different movements that there's been. It sometimes, I don't know if you ever think about this. You know, one time I was reading a book, a biography about someone who was in Germany after World War II, and it wasn't legal for them to homeschool. They had to send their children to school, and they worked really, really, really hard as a family to give their children Christian values, because at school, there were no Christian values. It was the opposite of that. They were very, what's the word? They were very flippant about God and the existence of God, and even facetious. They'd been so crushed by what they thought was good, it found out that they were bad, but it was very pervasive in school. And so sometimes, depending on where we live, we have certain rights and there are certain systems. And sometimes I think about the system that my children are going out into, that with the decline of tribes and small businesses and entrepreneurs, and how much harder it is because of licensure, because of laws, because of loans. There's a lot of factors that play into the difficulty, that it's actually a little bit more difficult for the man to provide, like what you were saying. Are you following me? That it's becoming more and more that women have to be in the workforce so that they can put food on the table and have shelter. And that's what the part of the times that we live in.
And then we have even less of a family when both are working.
Yeah. It makes it more difficult for the nurturing. And, I mean, there are things. I mean, it's interesting to think like this and to see like this and to know what are the challenges that we have. So when you talk about the challenge of providing, I'm just saying I remember dating Rick and feeling that responsibility on him and thinking, oh my goodness, that's heavy. Wow.
And, you know, this whole conversation brings up another thought that I have. One of the things that's important to me, when we mentor TGYC, we go through these characteristics of a statesman. And one of those is integrity. And as a class, we go through and read these biographies. And one of the assignments that we have is to create our own definition for these characteristics. And so the definition that I came up with for integrity for me is knowing God's will for me and doing it immediately. And you wrote a book called Say Go Be Do, which I love. And so that's part of our roles as patriarchs and matriarchs, is to be in tune with what is right for us, to know that, and to follow it. And going back to my story, you know, that was a huge leap of faith on our part to leave a you know, quote-unquote, secure six-figure income and walk away from all that and to start with almost nothing and try and create that. And I'm not saying that's right for everybody, but what is important is that we live our lives such that we can be in tune, and that when we have those kind of promptings, that we follow them and do them with integrity. And as we do that, we will then be a light to our children to do the same, to live their lives with integrity.
Absolutely. What are other challenges that you find to being a man instead of a Muppet of a man?
Well, going back with interacting with or being accountable and responsible with your spouse, I have a responsibility to her. John Gray wrote a book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And in that book, he talks about how men like to go to their cave and brood, if you will. And so when things are challenging, when things are hard, when they've got a big problem, the typical male response is to go into hiding. And so a challenge that I think we face as fathers, as husbands, is to come back out of the cave and to communicate and engage with our spouses, to communicate, to bring them into what we're dealing with, talking it through with them. You know, I'm an internal processor by nature. That's my personality. And so, you know, for me, it's compounded where, you know, my nature is to go in the cave as a man. And then on top of that, you know, I'm reticent to talk things out externally, verbally. And so a challenge for me then is to speak out, to communicate, to engage. And on top of that, since, you know, my nature is to think things through internally, to allow my wife the opportunity, who is an external processor, to communicate, to verbalize, so that we have a real relationship there.
Wow. Wow. So the principles here are to make the choices to communicate, whether it's not the norm as men because you want to go in your cave, or whether it's your personality in the way that you process, or if you're different than your spouse or the same as your spouse. So you're saying that making the efforts on one plane to having a good relationship with Amy through communication, even though you're going to have your own personal roadblocks to that.
Right.
It's so true. I'm applying this to me and Rick, and I'm thinking about what ours happened to be. I'm an external processor like Amy, and my husband, my communication language is also verbal, and my husband's is show. I think it took us 10 years of marriage for me to stop trying to force Rick to talk. For me to stop trying to make him speak my language, and for me to learn his, and to learn to see what he was saying in every way possible other than words, that he would show me through so many beautiful, simple ways what was in his heart, what was in his mind. And it helped so much when I finally let go of trying to make him match me, and I learned to see how he communicated and I matched him.
Awesome.
Interesting. Okay. Let me ask you this, and you can still talk to us. Let me ask you about challenges as a father. Part of the topic today is about being a father. And I think it's perfect that we've talked about being a husband first. So important that area gets worked on so that the father area is meaningful. What are some of the challenges to being the kind of man that you want to be as a father?
Let me touch on two, and then help me if I forget the second. One is learning, and two is the education that our kids have and careers. So as a father, and guessing that most of us here on the call are homeschooling as well. As a father, I have high expectations for my children. I expect a lot out of them. And for me, I need to be doing what I expect them to be doing. And so, and for me, I don't feel that I'm at full capacity. I don't feel like, well, I feel like I'm a hypocrite if I'm not learning, if I'm not engaging in study, if I'm not applying, if I'm not reading a book. I feel less alive when I'm not learning. And so the first part of that challenge, or the first part of that answer to your question, is engaging in education myself, doing something each week to learn something new, to study, to read, to better myself, to learn a new skill, to write, to do something, to be aware of current events, whatever that might look like. Applying that then to my children, you know, as homeschool dads, I think it's really easy. Myself, I grew up in public school, you know, then went to BYU. And so, you know, it's really easy to look at our kids and go, well, how are they going to be able to do anything with their lives when I don't see them applying themselves, or I don't see them going to school, I don't see their grades coming back? I don't know. There's a real challenge to that, I think, with not freaking out and being concerned about what's going to happen to those kids. And I don't know why, but I guess we've been blessed with the faith to put the system to the test, even though, you know, Amy and I didn't grow up being homeschooled ourselves. But looking at, you know, I have three young men now. My three oldest are boys, and I think that's where we typically have the most concern, because they have that huge responsibility that we talked about earlier to provide for their families as they leave home and set out on their own. And so my boys are the product of the system that we espouse with TJ Ed, with Lemmy. And, you know, I'm not worried about my boys. They are amazing. They, you know, above all, they have the ability to think on their own, which is just huge and will be so valuable throughout their lives. Chris went a year and a half to George Wythe. He's on scholarship at Utah State working on a music degree. Brad went 2 years to George Wythe. One of the most brilliant people on the planet. Dan he's currently serving a mission for our church, but was on scholarship to a great music college, music program prior to leaving. And they are all so capable. And so, sorry, I get long-winded, and I don't mean to brag on my boys, or maybe I do, but, you know, As a father, it's important to engage in what we expect them to be doing. So I engage as an entrepreneur. I engage in providing for my family. I show that example. I engage in education. And I set an example for them to follow in those paths so that they can be educated, that they can have a world-class liberal arts education, they can think for themselves, they can apply themselves, they can go be excellent in any field in which they choose as they go become their own dads now. In fact, I'm a few months away from becoming a grandpa, so that's fun to see.
Wow. That's wonderful. Did you cover both? You said help you cover both.
Yeah,
I did.
Yep.
So we have about 8 more minutes before we break for questions. And I know you have something to wrap up with, but I do have a question for you before you wrap us up. And we kind of touched on some of these things, but I just want to pull it out and reframe the question. What are the most important things that you do as a man?
Love others. inspire others, see the best in others, be an example for others. What did I miss, Tiff?
What do you, I'm gonna push you. What do you do? What? Because I know you. I watch you. There's a reason why you've been the one that's been asked to present about this. I see your influence with the youth in your Commonwealth. I see your influence with the dads and the moms in your Commonwealth. I see your influence over Amy, over your friendships. I see the influence you've had on my children. You and Amy have mentored some of my children. What do you do for you? What are some of the most important things you do for you?
Well, I try to keep that vision fresh in my mind. And every day I have this drawing that I've done of myself. Not literally, but how I see myself. And it's how I see myself and how I want myself to be. It's the ideal me. And so...
Wow, that's so powerful.
I spent quite a bit of time putting that together over a couple months, actually. And, you know, every once in a while I would go back and modify and add another word in there of a trait or a characteristic that I wanted to be a part of who I am, be a part of me. And so every day I look at that and go through it and remember who I am and who I'm becoming. That's part of what I do. And then I try to spend time in core things, core books, and dialoguing with my creator. And I'm working on those things where I'm fulfilling my purpose, where I'm living or attempting to live with integrity, to do those things that I know that I should be doing.
Right. And I think you kind of went over some of the most important things you do with Amy and even your children, some of those key things. I know that you have a closing for us, the rest of the story.
Yeah, do you want me to go there?
Yes, unless you want to say something before you go there.
I don't think so. You know, the website that I mentioned earlier, Structured Genius, that's the company that I started when I left Intel. And the reason for the name of that company is that I truly believe that every single one of us have genius within us, male and female both. I know that to be true. And, you know, so when I started my consulting company, that was my thing, is that I'll go help you structure your genius. I know that you have it. Let me give you some tools to help you go structure that genius to make you better, help you better utilize that genius that you've been given. But I really believe that every single one of us have genius within us. And as men, we are not Muppets. We're not rag dolls. We're not second rate. We need to accept the divine nature that is ours. We need to grab hold of that vision that our Maker has for us as his offspring to become like him, to be real patriarchs, to have influence, to make things better around us, to create an amazing life for our spouses and for our children, and to give them the ability and the opportunity to go do the same in their lives, to make a huge difference in the world. And so when I was going through the story, I didn't talk about the last child. So it's interesting because we were originally scheduled to do this call the day after my son Henry was born. So our oldest is 23 and our youngest is 2 months old now. And we always knew that there was another child that was supposed to come, and we went through a couple miscarriages, and that was hard, but we kept at it. And Henry Charles was born to us 2 months ago. And the reason I bring that up is that there are events in our lives that by their nature cause us to reflect and to think. And it's, you know, you could call it a reboot or hitting the reset button. When my son Henry was born, it caused me to think about my role as a father and what my responsibilities are as a father and as a husband. And there are things like that that happen all the time, whether it's, you know, the turning of a new year or a birthday or a child that's born or a grandchild or a new job or a new home, whatever those things are. When those things happen, or even just this event today, the thing that we have to remember is that we are not animals. We're not Neanderthals. The title of this book that I'm thinking about might be No More Neanderthals. We have the ability to change. We do not have to be stuck in that rut forever. And so when those events come or when those promptings come, we need to recognize and realize that as divine creatures, we have the ability to change who we are and to step up and take it to the next level, to man up. But whatever that next step might be for each one of us, wherever we might be in that path. And that's the rest of the story.
And having Henry helped you do that again.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I find that when we hit moments like that, I try and remember to ask myself two things. One of them is, what is it that I need to stop doing? And the other one is, what is it that I need to start doing? My trigger is a start-stop moment, because oftentimes that's what, if we can take the time to reflect and we reflect on, and that's part of our reflection, then we really, really become new. Because by stopping something that's not serving us, that's really not part of the vision, like you said, that you've made of yourself. And then starting something. And by creating that vacuum of stopping something, it makes the starting so much easier. Trying to add something into our life, that our lives that are so full, sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes you have to combine those two together. Okay, Kent, I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your willingness to share. I appreciate your willingness to love, to be vulnerable, to be so real. It's so important for all of us. I think that, you know, we have people on this call. They might have some questions for you. How do you feel if we open it up for questions for 10 minutes?
Okay.
Okay, all right. So, in order for me to know that you're asking a question, anybody who's on the call with us today, then you press 5-star, and then I'll unmute your line. So by pressing 5-star, I'll see whose hands are raised, and we can take questions. And I'm not, you know, maybe we won't have any questions today. Maybe we will. Let's watch and see. And if we don't, then I get to ask. Okay, we do. The phone number ends in 1434. Okay, who is this?
Okay. This is Becky Hinton.
Hi, Becky.
Hi. I really, really want my husband to be able to hear this. How do I know how he can listen to this call? I know it got recorded.
Okay. About an hour after we end, come to the
uh-huh.
mentor website, and it will be on the front page.
Okay.
Instructions will be how to go to it or how to download it.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's you bet. All right. Thank
you. A great
you,
call. I appreciated that.
Becky, where do you live?
We're in Hurricane, Utah.
You're in Hurricane. Okay. I was going to say, you've got a 435 number.
Yeah.
And your husband is a great man. I love him.
Thank you, Kent. He is a good man. I think he will really enjoy listening to the call.
Good. Wonderful. All right. Is there anyone else who has a question? Remember, just press 5-star. Okay, I get to ask a question while we're waiting to see if anyone else has a question, Kent.
Okay.
Speaking of the stop starts, what have you ever found in your life that you had to stop and start?
Yeah, going back to my story, you know, when we were in Colorado and you called us and introduced us to this new way of homeschooling, that was a big change and led to bigger changes with leaving Intel. And so for me, I stopped watching TV. I was a big fan of college sports and, you know, followed BYU and everything that they did and loved college football and would spend quite a few hours a week engaged in that. And that was what I stopped. And I started reading books again. And today, you know, TV is so foreign to me and sports is so foreign to me. And it's a thing that I'm glad that I left behind because it, like you said, it wasn't serving my purpose. It wasn't fulfilling my vision. If anything, it was distracting me from that vision and from my purpose as a father and as a husband. And going back in and reading great books like Les Miserables or And There Was Light by Jacques Lucien, you know, such amazing examples of other great men, other great people who have answered their own call to greatness, who live with integrity, who see the prompting, hear the prompting, and act on it. It's so inspiring and enabling and fulfilling to me to be engaged in that arena. Whereas college football, I don't think ever did a thing for me.
Wow. Thank you. Okay, we don't have any more.
That's on a bigger scale, and there are small things. I mean, there are big things and small things where we can stop and start.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm going to think about that today. Even for me, some of my stop starts. Wow. Okay, we've got one more question here. It ends in 9121.
Hi.
Hi, who is this?
My name's Camille.
Hello, Camille. All right, go ahead and ask your question. Camille, are you there? Did I lose you? Kent, are you still there?
I am.
Somehow I lost Camille. All right, we've got another question. Let me open up this one. I'm opening up your line. It's 9009. That's the ending of your phone.
thanks. Luckily, my husband was listening to the call too, so I don't know. My phone just dropped the call right then. So I had two questions. One, what resources, if any, like books or whatever, did Ken happen to have for creating this vision? And number two, what kind of things would you recommend for as a wife in helping to keep that vision going for your husband and create it, keep it going, enhance it, anything like that?
Sure. You know, I just read a fabulous book a few weeks ago that is now probably one of my all-time favorites to answer your first question about resources. The book is called Conscious Creator by Chris Crone and Stephen Palmer. And it's written as a novel in story format, but it teaches a bunch of principles. And then there's some activities that you can download from the internet to help you create that vision for yourself and understand how to bring that vision to life. Fantastic book, great resource. And then on top of that, any of the classics like Les Mis or Jacques Lussierens and There Was Light, you know, anything like that. Most of Oliver DeMille books, his books have lists of classics in the back of them, or you can just go look them up online. The second part of your question, I like a lot of what Kirk Duncan does. He's a great mentor. He has some recordings that you can download. Some of those have to do with the relationship with husband and wife and how to strengthen that relationship and strengthen each other in that relationship. The drawing that I have of myself, for example, I learned from Kirk Duncan. So he has a lot of good insights.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So did you want him to answer more about what things you can do as a wife?
Yeah, like maybe examples of what maybe for him that helps strengthen his vision and, you know, carry it through and enhance it.
Or make it possible.
You know,
did you hear that, Kent?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is just to believe in your husband. For me as a husband, I think that's one of the biggest things is for me that it's almost the end all be all is my wife's approval. That's not quite what I mean. It's knowing that she believes in me, that I can do what I need to do, having her support, having her trust, having her faith in me as a husband, as a father, as a provider, whatever role I take on, knowing that she believes in me is a huge strength to me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you, Camille, for asking. Okay, we don't have any more questions, and it's perfect. It's 1 minute after 9. Kent, I want to tell you thank you for the influence that you've had in my life and on the people that I see and who you are. I thank you for coming on this call and sharing some insights. We're excited to get the call up online so people who couldn't come can come get it. You have any remarks you want to say in closing?
Yeah, thank you, and you're welcome, and thank you for your influence in my life. The thing I would add is that not degrading myself, there's nothing special about me. There really isn't. Every single one of us are equal in that standpoint. Every single one of us have that divine spark within us. Every single one of us have that genius within us. And so really, it's just about what is, the right next thing for me to do in my life. Figure out what that is and go do it and live life with integrity.
Perfect.
You're all amazing.
Thank you.
You're all amazing. I love you.
All right. We'll see almost all of you and most of you at Lemme Training this summer. And thank you, Kent.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.